You're listening to Minds of Forestry by Tyler Dennis. Welcome back to another episode of Minds of Forestry. Sorry for the hiatus, everybody, but I was off doing other things. I was doing some water quality stuff on the environment side, and but I'm back here in forestry, so I figured I'd sit down and discuss streams and wetlands this time around. So, yeah, sit back and let's chit-chat about streams and wetlands. To begin with, we got, six classifications of streams. So starting off with the biggest streams, we have S1, S1A and S1B. There's two different classifications. And then we have an S2, which is anything over 5 meters to 20 meters in wetted width or channel width. And then you have your S3s, which is 1.5 meters to 3 meters. And then you have your S4, which is anywhere from 0 to 1.5 meters. And then your other classifications are S5, which is a non-fish bearing, S3 or greater. And then you have your S6, which is an S4 that is non-fish bearing. So we're going to go into a little bit of details about that and what I generally find in the field and just kind of how to work around them. We're going to go over some buffer zones, some RMAs for road arrangements, and so I figure we're just going to get right into it. We're going to start with your S1s being the biggest 20 meter plus wetted channel width. I don't deal with those because those are major rivers. Like where I'm at, it's like the Nechaco River or the Fraser River being up here in the northern BC. Or we've got like the Parsnip or just anything generally bigger than 20 meters in width. Then you got your S2s, which comes right down to being 5 meters to 20 meters in width. So that's channel to channel, meaning that it's rooted vegetation to rooted vegetation, which is bank to bank, essentially. That is how you're going to indicate these measurements on these streams, is going to be essentially your rooted veg to rooted veg. Now, S2s, I have come across quite a few of them. They are interesting water channels, and I really like them because they tend to be fish bearing, obviously, with adults and juvenile fish, and they're just fun to be around. I mean, I'm a really big fish guy, and I like to be around water. So, whenever I find an S2, I have a heyday. And then your buffer zones for your S2s, I believe it is 45 meters for your boundary, your block boundary. And then you're supposed to add half of the block or half of the buffer for your RMA, which is 65 meters for your roads. That's just to indicate that there's no road disturbance when it comes time to harvest. And then your S3s being 1.5 meters to 5 meters, they tend to be the most common or second most common stream you deal with, because it's just generally you can identify them on maps, but I mean at the same time they could not be documented. So they tend to be smaller streams. Just they're also fun to be around because they also hold adult fish and juveniles all the way down to fry, meaning yearlings. And it's quite interesting to see the ecosystems around these S3s, because they can be in such diverse areas. And then your buffer zones for an S3 is going to be roughly 35 meters. I mean, technically, right now in British Columbia, they're supposed to be 33 meters. That's with the new moose management areas. But ideally, we try to bump it up to 35 just to give it an extra like screen. That way, the channel is protected from the harsh UV rays of the sun. And then your RMA, again, you're just going to add half of the buffer zone to that for your roads. So ideally, you want your roads to be at least 15 to 20 meters away from the block boundary when you're laying out. Now we're dropping down to probably the most common classification you're going to see in forestry for streams, and that is the S4. And an S4 is 0 to 1.5 meters in channel width, and it has, so these are all continuous channels. So it has to be continuous channel for over 100 meters. And that is where an S4 can be difficult because it can have intermittent channels. There could be rooted vegetation within the streams. So all that kind of goes into play. And there's also some other classifications for these S4s that we're going to consider. So we'll get into that after. But yeah, your S4, ideally, you're just going to do it a 15-meter hard buffer for your block boundary. Ideally, you can go up to 10 meters and then do a 5-meter machine-free. But I like to stick to a hard buffer. So that way, we're really protecting that waterway, because it's so important to protect these streams, because so many streams just disappear after logging. And it's disappointing. But for your RMA, you're just going to stay that 15 meters off of the boundary. Because, I mean, you don't want your road going right up to it and causing damage or sediment build up in that stream. And then we're going to go right down to your S6s, which are non-fish-bearing S4s. And then an S5, which is a non-bearing S3. Or an S2. And you can't just look at a stream and say it's not fish bearing because, oh, I saw a wetland downstream. It actually takes a lot of investigating to identify if a stream is fish bearing or not. I like to live by one specific saying, and that is, where there is water, there will be fish. So never put off a stream that you may think is non-fish bearing, because when in doubt, it's better to overclassify than underclassify for permitting, because if they want to send somebody in to check if that stream is non-fish bearing, they will. But it's easier to say it's fish bearing and then move on, because then they'll still implement all the necessary protocols to make sure that that habitat in the area is managed properly. And then now getting into the other classifications on like the S4s. So when you have continuous channel, but you may have rooted vegetation growing in like in the channel and it cuts off flow, it could potentially be an NCD, which is a non-classified drainage. But at the same time, a non-classified drainage can be anything like a ditch. But you need to really take in consideration that it has to be less than 100 meter of scour and flow for you to be able to classify an S4 as an NCD. And then you also have your wet draws, which are just kind of draws that are wet with no scouring, and then you have a nil, which is nothing essentially. And yeah, so that kind of gets down into the dirty with streams. And then Yeah, you're just gonna really want to make sure you classify everything properly, and that's one big thing I do and take pride in is that I'm always out doing fish or stream classifications just because I enjoy it and it's a big part of what I do. So with that being said, we might move on to wetlands, and we'll get into that shortly. So we're gonna start talking about wetlands and just how important they are to our ecosystems in the forests. So essentially, we're going to talk about three classifications that I'm aware of. I know there's more, but these are the main three that I end up dealing with on a day-to-day basis up here in northern British Columbia. So starting off with kind of your smallest one, it's called a W3. A W3 is anywhere from 0 to 3 hectares in size. And then you're going to have a W1 wetland, which is 3 to 5 hectares. And then ultimately, the biggest one that I am aware of is a W5, which is a complex. So let's get into that one real quick. The W5 complex is where there is multiple wetlands in an area where their RMAs overlap. So which means if it's less than, I think it was what, 70 meters between the forested area between the two wetlands, you're going to consider that the same wetland. So if you have two W3s next to each other and a W1 to the north of one of them, and they're all within the RMAs, you're going to consider that a W5 complex, which is then classified as a singular wetland. And then your buffer zone is going to be up to, I think it's 45 meters for a W5. I'm not too sure. I haven't had to do too much boundary layout around or within W5 specs. And then we're going to drop down to your W1. So W1 wetland, again, is anywhere from 3 to 5 hectares. And then your buffer zones are going to be, it's 33 meters, so bump it up to a 35 meter buffer zone for hard boundaries. And then your W3, I think it's only 25 meters for a buffer zone. And then ideally, if you have indications of like animal highways within these wetlands or on the edges of these wetlands, you should add at least 5 meters to your buffer zone so that way these game trails are preserved. I know that sometimes clients, they want the game trail to be within the block boundary. And then they'll just stub everything around this game trail so that way it's still maintained. But it's each to their own. However, you may want to preserve these trails. I would always run it by your RPF who's calling the shots, and they have better ideas than me. Because you gotta remember, I'm just a lowly forest technician. I'm just saying all this because this is what I do on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, wetlands alone make up a lot of the areas that I work around. And it's always interesting because you see a lot of the ecosystem changes within these areas. Back in way back when the natives in the area would walk along these edges of these wetlands, they'd create CMT trails, blaze trails, and it's always so fun and so cool to see these blaze trails and CMTs. But the biggest thing that I try to look for are cache pits on the south-facing sandy-soiled wetland slopes, because that's ideally where these natives are going to store their tools. And I can't touch them, but it's always nice to see them around because then you can verify that there was activity in the area, and you can bring it forth to the band that you're working with or that your client is directly working with. But that brings me to kind of to the base end of it. Wetlands and streams are a big portion of wildlife and forestry management, because without them, we're not able to see a thriving forest, because all your water coming from those blocks are going to flow into these streams or in these wetlands. And it's just a big, diverse ecosystem that I can't even explain in one episode. I could, but it would take me a lot of research and a lot of talking. But, yeah, I essentially, it comes right down to protect your streams, because I have observed many, many streams over the years they just disappear because the logging practices were not sufficient enough to protect them. And we lose lots of fish area, not even just salmon area. It's mostly like rainbow trout, which are not a lot more sensitive than salmonoids, but they're really, really, really sensitive to area change. So that's something to consider. And yeah, be diligent out there. When you're out doing stream classifications, it's better to overclass than underclass. Remember that. And yeah, I really enjoyed doing this episode. I will try to do another episode like this as a part two with some better descriptions in the wetlands and streams. But for the most part, I've been your host, Tyler Dennis, and this has been another episode of Minds of Forestry.